It's happy seed.
It's half past eight New York time. Time to wake up America and stump the experts. Each week at this time, Lucky Strike sets up a board of four undaunted experts for you to try to daunt. For every question we use, Lucky Strike pays out $10 plus a copy of the new Information Please quiz book. If your question stumps us, you get $25 more plus a 24-volume set of the current Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your questions to Information Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. If our editorial staff edits your questions a bit, don't fret over it. In case of similarity, we'll have to be the sole judge of who shall be paid, and all questions become the property of Information Please. And now add up a lucky strike as I present our master of ceremonies, the literary critic of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman. Mr. Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, Information Please keeps right on going in its carefree, unrehearsed, and unprepared way. And tonight, our board includes Franklin P. Adams, light verse writer and conductor of the Conning Tower in the New York Post, John Kieran, sports writer and rememberer extraordinary, and our guests are a couple of old feudists, the humorist Frank Sullivan, one of the backers of the great hit Arsenic and Old Lace, is here to pick a bone with the famous theatrical publicity agent, Mr. Dick Maney, who has done what he could for that show, but just hasn't been able to satisfy Mr. Sullivan. Now remember, for each question that's missed, Lucky Strike rings up $25. And that's paid out to the sender, plus 24 volumes of the Encyclopedia Britannica. We're off with a question from Allison Smith of New York City. Now this is all about oil, gentlemen, oil. O-I-L, Mr. Adams, oil. Who is or was, get two out of three on this, the oil man who backed a baseball league? The oil man who backed a baseball league. We have Miss Maney's hand up at once.
Harry Sinclair.
Backed what league?
Federal league.
That's exactly right, Mr. Maney. Very good. And now, you should have known that as an old backer, Mr. Sullivan, yourself. Who is or was the oil man who backed a play and paid for its audience? Got three hands. Mr. Sullivan.
Edgar Davis.
Who was Edgar Davis?
He was a Texas oil millionaire who backed a play called The Ladder, I think.
Yes, that's right. How long did the play run, Mr. Sullivan, do you remember?
A long time, I think nearly a year or more.
Yes, I think practically the entire population of the
tickets
city.
Tickets were free.
Yes, tickets were free. Right.
And well worth it.
I was going to say no bargain. Now, gentlemen, who is or was the oil company who backed a comedian? Mr. Adams.
The Texas Oil Company.
Yes, backed what comedian?
F. Allen.
F. Allen. Give him his full name.
And well worth the money,
F.
too.
F. P. Allen.
Thank you,
full
Mr.
name
Kidd.
And right name is John Sullivan.
Is it really?
Yep.
Any relative?
Nope.
Changed his name for business reasons, Mr. Adams?
For Sullivan reasons.
Now, off the record, and speaking of backers, can you name a water boy who backed wholesale murder? Mr. Maney.
Frank Sullivan, an ingrate and an Indian giver.
Wait, that starts us off beautifully. I gather that at one time Mr. Sullivan was a water boy?
I understand. Peering into his hideous past, he was once a water boy at the racetrack at Saratoga.
Is that true, Mr. Sullivan?
That is true.
Well, that's...
Made more money than I've ever made since.
Well, we know just what company we're in now. Now, gentlemen, R.E. Schultz of New York asks this one. Give the first word or its translation in the following classics. Get three out of four. The first word or its translation of the Canterbury Tales, Chaucer's Canterbury Tales. Just the first word is all I ask. Mr. Maney?
When.
When. How do you spell it?
When not a Prilla with a shorter stutter. How do you spell it?
Yes.
I wouldn't know.
W-H-A-N.
W-H-A-N, Mr. Adams. That's right. It's what kind of English?
Old.
Well, I think sort of middle.
Middle.
Do you know any of the rest of it?
Chaucerian English.
I guess it's... Is it middle English? Mr. Maney, do you know? You have the look of a Chaucer scholar around the jowls.
Know any more of the...
You know any more of the beginning of the Canterbury Tale?
And that a prilla with his shorter soda, the draught of March, had parachute to the rota, and bathed every vein, and switched liqueur, of which there too engendered is the floor. Is that enough?
You scare me. You scare me. Mr. Sullivan, are all theatrical publicity agents built along these lines?
I've been coaching him for some months.
Now, can you give me the first word of Tom Sawyer? How does the book begin? Just the first word. Mr. Adams.
You, Tom.
Oh, that's too much, I think.
Tom.
That's right. Who says it, Mr. Adams?
Next
sentence, any chance?
Exclamation point, end quote.
I'll let it go with that. But the next non-punctuational line is, there was no answer. Now, gentlemen, how does the face on the ballroom floor begin? What is the first word of same? Mr. Adams?
It.
No.
Twas.
That's right. what is the first line, Mr. Adams?
Twas a balmy summer evening.
Yes, I think I'll give you 100% on that. Now, how about the Iliad? Written by one Homer. The Iliad. What is the first word? In Greek or English?
Achilles, I think, isn't it?
No, it is not.
Killer's wrath, the direful spring of woes unutterable.
That's the first word of one English translation.
That's Pope's, isn't it?
You're quite right. What's the first word in the Greek? Would you know?
I wouldn't know the Greek.
And there's no reason why you should. The first word is in Greek is menin, which means wrath.
Fury.
Yes, wrath or fury, which is the theme of the book. Sing, wrath, the sing muse, the wrath of Achilles, and so forth. Well, that gives us about 3.5 out of 4. And sends us on to a question from Hartley Baxter of Brunswick, Maine. Get 2 out of 3 on this. Each of these pitchers recently stopped a winning streak. What team was stopped, and how long was the streak? First case is that of Bucky Walters of Cincinnati. Stopped, Mr. Maney?
Stopped a 9-game winning streak of Brooklyn.
Very good, very good, very good. I'm going to have trouble with you, Mr. Maney. You know too much. How about Dutch Leonard of Washington? Mr. Kieran?
Well, it has to be either... I think I was Cleveland.
Yes, it was. How long was the winning streak?
That was longer than 9 games, I think. Well, it was around 9 games.
Yes, not very much longer.
10 or 11.
Say 11.
11.
11 is right. Joe Sullivan of the Braves stopped whose winning streak? Mr. Kieran.
Cardinals.
Pardon?
Cardinals.
Yes, after how many games?
Oh, they'd won about 10, I think.
That's right. 10 is exactly right. That gives us 3 out of 3. Thank you, Mr. Kieran and Mr. Maney. Here's one from Mr. John L. Diefendorf of Milwaukee. Get 2 out of 3 if you can. It's a Shakespeare question. Identify the famous Shakespearean speech from a few words that I'm going to give you and quote a few lines of the speech if you can. Here's the first set of words that occur in the speech. Slings, arrows, arms, coil. Mr. Adams?
Bear the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune.
Yes. It's from what speech?
Hamlet.
Which one? He speaks a great deal.
The soliloquy.
Yes. Which one? There are 5.
I think the second.
Oh, now you have me.
I thought as much.
How, Mr. Kieran, want to help us out?
I think that's the first soliloquy.
What is the first
to
one?
To be.
To be or not to be. Yes. That's exactly right. Now, here's another set of Shakespearean words. Throne, aisle, fortress, stone. Mr. Kieran.
That's from Richard II. That's John of Gaunt's speech about England.
That's perfectly right. Can you give us any of the lines? Sullivan, you had your hand up, too.
This England, this something or other, this
that's
aisle. Goes on like that for some.
That's good. Silver. Mr. Maney, can you help us?
This demi-paradise. Or is it this demi-Eden?
This seat of Mars, this other Eden, demi-paradise?
Demi-paradise.
Have you been coaching Mr. Sullivan, Mr. Maney?
Just a little.
I see. That's quite right. Now, here's another set of words. Sleeve, bath, bomb. That's B-A-L-M. Feast. Mr. Adams?
How do you spell sleeve?
I spell it on this card, S-L-E-A-V-E, but it's the same as sleeve, the
sleeve. Sleep that knits up the raveled sleeve of care.
That's perfect. It's from what play?
There you have me.
No, no, I think I can get it out of you by a little extortion work. What would you think?
I don't know. I had a great deal of trouble with that last week. Because the composing room thought I was wrong and should have spelled S-L-E-A-V-E.
No, Shakespeare spells it S-L-E-A-V-E.
I know it means a knot.
Well, if you know everything about the spelling, why don't you know in what play the line occurs? Mr. Kieran?
I think that's King Henry IV, isn't it?
Oh, no, no.
Well, there are about 16 soliloquies on sleep in Shakespeare.
Yes, but nothing, none, I think, that uses the word sleeve.
Oh, yeah.
Mr. Sullivan?
I'll guess Macbeth.
Macbeth would be right. Mr. Kieran, you seem to think I was wrong. I may be.
Yes, he has used that same simile in other soliloquies on sleep, but that's the one where Macbeth calls sleep great nature's second course.
That's quite right. Well, apparently you all know it in parts. Thank you very much. It was nice not to have you talking for a minute or two, Mr. Maney. Here's one. Here's one from Palmer Hager of Hagerstown, Maryland. Can you give me four cliches, common expressions, frequently heard in leading up to a bit of gossip? Before people give you a bit of gossip, they sometimes say, Mr. Sullivan?
This one will kill you.
That's a good one. Mr. Adams?
Don't look now.
Or if you're going to say a joke, I think, rather than a bit of gossip. Mr. Kieran?
This is right from the feed box.
That would be good, yeah. Mr. Sullivan again?
I don't say I told you, but...
That's a very good Mr. Sullivan. You ever make collection of that particular kind of cliché, Mr. Sullivan? I know you're an old cliché expert.
No, I haven't. That's an idea, though.
It's an idea, yeah.
I'll make a little extra money.
Mr. Sullivan. Here's one from Mrs. E. Carter Rawson of Portland, Oregon. Get 2 out of 3. What did each of these words mean originally, and how did it come to get its present meaning? And the first word is infant. What did it originally mean? What is the actual derivation of the word?
It comes from infans.
You're quite
helpless.
Right.
Helpless. I think it means helpless, doesn't it?
Not helpless, no.
Not doing.
No, not that
speaking?
Either.
Not speaking?
Not speaking, Mr.
Not
Kieran.
Speaking.
That's right. That's right. In means not, plus fare to speak, therefore speechless. Almost helpless, but not quite, Mr. Kieran. Now, how about police? Police. What's the original? No.
That's
no.
Polish.
It's a Greek word. It's a Greek word, Mr. Kieran.
I was thinking of another word.
Any ideas? Well, it's from the...
City.
Yes, it's from city, Mr. Adams. That's quite right. Now, how do you connect it with police?
They work in the city.
I'll take that. It means simply the guardian of the city, from the Greek polis, meaning city. We have words
metropolitan.
Like metropolitan, cosmopolitan, all of those come from the same root. How about the word insult? You ought to be good at this, Mr. Sullivan.
He's better.
Who, Meany?
Meany.
All right, I'll take Meany on insult. What is the original meaning of insult? How about guesses, gentlemen?
Jump in.
So you're very good, Mr. Adams, at these guesses. Very good.
Guess?
Oh, did you know that all along? Seems to me you're an instinctive etymologist. Yes, from the Latin salire to in me pon, which is pretty near the same as jump in. I'll take that one. And go on with this one from Anne Honeycutt of the city. Now, get all on this. I think that Mr. Meany is the one intended to answer this question. Here are four quotes used in connection with the publicity of Arsenic and Old Lace, a play now dragging on its weary way here on Broadway. Each quote was lifted by the press agent, Mr. Meany, from a dramatic criticism of this play. Can you identify the critic who authored each line? Mr. Meany, offhand, do you think you'd be able to do that? I'm going to give you four lines. Tell me who wrote them.
I will take a shot at it.
All right, here we go. So funny, none of us will ever forget it. Who said that?
Brooks Atkinson of the New York Times.
That's very good. The most riotously hilarious comedy of the season. Mr. Meany?
That was a commonplace.
Now we'll let the rest of you boys in on it. Mr. Sullivan, the old backer.
I think they all said that, didn't they? They started out by saying
that. Richard Watts of the Herald Tribune said the most riotously hilarious comedy of the season. Sounded like a pretty good show, Mr. Meany.
It is indeed.
How about this?
Pick them up for Saturday.
So side-splitting and terrific, it can be guaranteed to make even dramatic critics like the theater. Mr. Meany?
John Nathan Brown, the New York Post.
Right. And, quote, you wouldn't believe homicidal mania could be so funny. You wouldn't believe homicidal mania could be so funny.
Sounds like Lockridge.
It is Lockridge indeed, Mr. Meany. Thank you very much. No, we only got 3 out of 4. That wasn't enough. That sends $25 to Mr. Honeycutt plus a copy plus 24 volumes of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Now, so far, we've paid out $25 and one set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Now, Mr. Cross gives us an exact quotation from Mr. Cross.
Well, Mr. Fadiman, when I saw my first tobacco auction, one comment I made was, quote, I'm amazed at this open buying. Everybody can see who buys what tobacco and the price is paid, end quote. Now, we think you smokers should have this same open and above board information to guide you. So we quote actual reports from the tobacco markets. For example, in Bloomfield, Kentucky, the American Tobacco Company last season paid 28% more per pound for the tobacco it bought for its cigarettes and other tobacco products. Yes, 28% above the average market price paid for all the various types and grades of tobacco sold there. And the best we bought will go to Lucky's. Now, so it goes at market after market. We pay the price to get the finer, the lighter, the naturally milder tobaccos for Lucky's. Mr. Fadiman, shouldn't open and above board facts about tobacco outweigh claims?
I'm for facts every time, Mr. Cross, especially when they're delivered in just 55 seconds. Now we'll go on with the second part of the program this evening with a question from W. Everett Zim of Philadelphia. Can you quote lines, gentlemen, that mention four different kinds of money or monetary terms, foreign or American? Mr. Curran?
The rank is but the guinea stamp. The man's the gout for all that.
That's a dandy. And it's from what poet?
Robert Burns.
Very good.
For all that and all that.
For all that and all that. That sets us going. Now, Mr. Sullivan, you're, I understand, somewhat of an expert on money. Couldn't you help us out with a line of poetry or prose?
A diller, a dollar. A 10 o'clock scholar.
Very good. That gives us guinea and dollar. Mr. Meany?
Who steals my purse steals trash.
Well, that is about a receiver for money, but I'm thinking of definite coins or monetary terms. Mr. Adams?
You may break, you may shatter the vase, if you will, but the scent of the roses will hang on.
That's a beauty. Beauty, Mr. Adams. Mr. Sullivan?
Well, wasn't there something in the night before Christmas about old St. Nick will be here?
Well, I think we're going down the ladder.
You're thinking of Nicholas Nickleby.
I think he must be thinking of the bank where the wild dime grows, Mr. Adams. That gives us three. Yes, Mr. Kieran?
Well, in The Merchant of Venice, you will have Isaac asking for his pound of flesh.
Yes, that's very good. Your pound of flesh.
Isn't there something about drachmas in there?
Don't remember it. Do you, Mr. Meany?
No.
Why not?
It'll be bewildered.
There's a famous line by a former vice president of the United States, Mr. Kieran.
What this country needs is a good 5 cent cigar.
That's right, yes. Well, that, I think, gives us 4 or 5. And how about this from Mrs. Corinne Niles of Angleton, Texas? Over which country did Napoleon place or suggest these people as kings? Get 3 out of 4. His brother Joseph, he placed over what country, Mr. Meany?
Spain.
Spain is right. His brother Louis, Mr. Meany?
Holland.
You collect Napoleona in your spare time, Mr. Meany?
A little.
Where do you pick these things up?
4th Avenue.
He placed his son as king over Mr. Kieran?
Rome.
Rome, yes. And he placed General Bernadotte on what throne, Mr. Sullivan?
Sweden.
Well, this is very easy and very well done. Now, the next one from Mrs. Kate P. Thayer of Germantown, Pennsylvania. Get 2 out of 3. Who or what, in poetry or song, stood still close by the meeting house on the hill? That's a quotation, Mr. Adams. Who or what? Who or what?
Is it what or who?
It's what.
My grandfather's clock.
No, I don't think the grandfather's clock stood still close by the meeting house on the hill. Miss Kieran?
The wonderful one-horse shay.
Yes, what part of it?
The horse.
That's right, the horse, yes. That's right, that's correct. The horse in the wonderful one-horse shay. What poem are you referring to, Mr.
The wonderful one-horse shay by O.W. Holmes.
Yes, actually that is the title of it, though we think of it that way. Do you know what the title is?
Logic, something about logic.
The Deacon's Masterpiece, the Deacon's, I think it's called. I'm afraid we'll have to count that wrong.
Logic is logic.
You rushed in, Mr. Kieran. Mr. Adams, now how about this one? Who or what shall stand between their loved homes and the war's desolation? Have any of you heard Mr. Adams?
That is from Columbia, the Gem of the Ocean.
No, you're in the right spirit, but the wrong... Wrong poem, Mr. Sullivan.
Star Spangled Banner.
That's right, Mr. Adams. But who or what shall stand, Mr. Sullivan?
Freeman.
Freeman, Mr. Adams. Thank you very much. That's correct. Freeman shall stand. Now, how about this one? Who or what stood against the world? Stood against the world. Again, a presumably well-known quotation. Have to get this right, gentlemen. Otherwise, we lose $25. Doesn't seem to worry Mr. Sullivan at all. The word of Caesar.
might have stood against the world. Now lies he there, and none so poor to do him reverence. Mr. Kieran, that comes back to you now, doesn't
it? Too late.
Well, that sends $25, courtesy of Lucky Strike, to Mrs. Slayer, plus a set of the Britannica, and sends us on to the next question from C.W. Asling in Nashville, Tennessee. Get 2 out of 3 if you can. If the manager of a play called on you as a prop man for these props, for what play would you need them? Here's the first set of props. A crown, a glass vial, a spade, and a skull. What play? Mr. Sullivan.
Hamlet.
Is perfectly correct. Newspapers, a cake of ice, a live chicken, a string of frankfurters, and revolvers. What play? Mr. Adams.
Hell's a poppin'.
Absolutely right. That is the name of a play and not a statement of policy, is it, Mr. Adams?
Hell's a poppin'.
Golf
we're
sticks.
On the air.
That's right. Golf sticks, tennis racket, fencing foils, a violin case, a parrot, and a monkey. What play? This goes back a couple of years, I guess.
You can't take it with you?
No. You might think so, though. The props are crazy enough for it. Mr. Maney, I guess? We're all right. The Royal Family. The Royal Family by Mr. Kaufman and Miss Ferber. Use those props. Now, how about this one from Alice L. Stevens of Hutchinson, Kansas? Get 2 out of 3 if you can. Each of these names should suggest a recent news event or someone prominent in the news of the last week or so. Who or what is it? The first is Leonidas. Leonidas. Mr. Adams?
That would suggest Thermopylae.
Yes.
Or, as the current Greeks call it, Thermopylae.
Oh, they do?
Yes, they did. I heard that the other day.
And how does that tie in with recent news events, Mr. Adams?
He held the pass.
Yes, and how does that tie in with recent news events? This was a long time ago that Leonidas held the pass.
Well, there was a little trouble over there. Recently,
yes,
in Greece.
Yes, and the Greeks held the pass with as long as they could with a fortitude very similar to that of their forebears of long ago. Very well. Now, how about this one? Harun al-Rashid. Harun al-Rashid. Mr. Sullivan.
Wouldn't that tie up with Iraq?
Yes. Who was Harun al-Rashid, Mr. Sullivan?
Famous caliph from that part of the world?
Yes. What town do you live in?
Baghdad.
And there's a little trouble going on, as Mr. Adams would put it.
Difference of opinion over there?
Yes, that section of the world. That's right. Recent outbreak in Iraq and Arabia might recall the name of Harun al-Rashid. Now, how about the Marquess of Douglas and Clydesdale? That's one man. Mr. Kieran?
That has to do with the descent from the skies of not an angel.
No, no.
Because the Marquess of Douglas and Clydesdale was a former champion amateur heavyweight boxer,
yeah.
And it was through his sporting proclivities that he met Hess in Germany.
Yes. When did he meet him?
Well, he met him, I believe, during the Olympic Games.
Yes, that was in 1936. Yes. And the present title of the Duke is of the Marquess is what, Mr. Kieran? Change his name.
Hamilton. Then. Duke of Hamilton.
Yes, the Duke of Hamilton. Well, that gives us 3 out of 3, gentlemen. You're very good this evening. How about this from Gene Lee Hansen of Iowa Falls, Iowa? Get 2 out of 3. How did these characters from poetry meet their deaths? Under what circumstances? The first is Annabel Lee. What did she die of, Mr. Adams?
I don't know. She was a child.
Yes. But that's not a fatal
disease. I imagine it was galloping tuberculosis.
What a morbid imagination. No, it's Mr. Kieran.
A wind came out of the sea,
yes.
Killing and killing.
Yeah, no worse than a bad cold, Mr. Adams. Mr. Kieran, what were you going to say?
I was going to say that, but it was also envy in it because the angels envied...
her and me.
Her and me.
Yes, combination of envy and pneumonia, probably. Now, how about the Lady of Shalott? How did she meet her death? Mr. Kieran.
She died. She was bewitched. She died from a charm that was put upon her.
Yes. And
she turned and looked out into the world instead of looking at it backwards through a mirror. And she dropped dead because of the sorcery.
Did she drop dead at once, or did she sort of drop dead gradually?
Well, I wasn't there, but I hear she went fast.
How did she get herself into that boat that went down the river, Mr. Kieran, if she were dead? Didn't she get into a boat?
Oh, you're thinking of Elaine the Fair, Elaine the Lovable, Elaine the Lily Maid of Astolat.
Have I got them mixed up?
I think you have.
I have so many friends. Jim Bledsoe lost His life, how? Jim Bludsoe. Mr. I have several hands. Mr. Kieran?
I think he died in a fire, didn't he?
What kind of fire?
Why, the steamboat fire. He's
on the Prairie Belle.
That's right. Right. Yes, very good. That gives us 3 out of 3. Now,
how do you like that, man?
Get these.
What do you got?
This is from T. Vincent Gould of Miami. What decisive battles brought about these historic events? The overthrow of the French Empire and the establishment of the Third Republic. What battle brought that about? Hands, gentlemen. Mr. Maney.
I withdraw the answer.
All right. Mr. Kieran.
Objection sustained.
Mr. Kieran?
Well, it was the battle around Metz.
Sedan was Sedan. The battle. The liberation of Germany from France came about as a result of what battle? Mr. Maney?
Leipzig.
Yes. The humbling of Louis XIV came about as a result of what battle? Well, I'm sorry, gentlemen. The answer is Blenheim, and I think that loses us $25, courtesy of Lucky Strike, and one set of the Britannia. And now Mr. Cross wants to show us how the tobacco picture looks to a real insider.
His name, ladies and gentlemen, is Mr. Fred McLaughlin. He hails from Florence, South Carolina. And as a tobacco auctioneer, he, of course, deals with all buyers on an equal basis. Now, I'm not going to try to quote him exactly, but here, in a nutshell, is what he said the other day. That in one tobacco market after another, he has seen Lucky's pay higher prices to get the finer, milder leaf. Well, just to give you a few typical examples, at Hartsville, Tennessee last season, American paid 20% more than the market average. At Gallatin, Tennessee, 32% more. At Mebane, North Carolina, 34% more. In fact, at market after market all over tobacco land, independent tobacco experts like Mr. McLaughlin see us pay the price to get the finer, the lighter, the naturally milder tobaccos for Lucky's. So they smoke Lucky's 2-to-1. That's why we ask you, for your own smoking enjoyment, to try Lucky's for a week. Make the next package of cigarettes you buy Lucky Strikes.
Thank you, Mr. Cross. This evening, Lucky Strike has cheerfully paid out the sum of $75 and 3 sets of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Thank you, Mr. Sullivan. Thank you, Mr. Maney, for feuding in Lucky Strike's arena tonight. Now, next week will be a sort of birthday celebration. Information, please, will be 3 years old tomorrow, and we're going to celebrate our birthday 1 week from tonight. At that time, the 3 regulars will be on hand, Mr. Kieran, Mr. Levant, and Mr. Adams. And as our guests, well, I've been sitting in the driver's seat now for 3 years, and it's about time I gave my colleagues a chance to show me what the hot seat is like. And so, ladies and gentlemen, the guest of honor next week is Clifton Fadiman, and heaven help him, and Deans Taylor will do the emceeing. Now, remember, for every question we use, whether or not it's answered correctly, the sender gets $10. If the question stumps our experts, you not only get $25 more, but in addition, the complete 24-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Remember to send your letters with questions and the correct answers to Information, Please, at 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. And now we'll listen to a parting message from Mr. L.A. Speed Riggs, the famous tobacco auctioneer from Goldsboro, North Carolina.
And that chant, fully interpreted, ladies and gentlemen, means Lucky's pay the price to get the finer, the lighter, the naturally milder tobaccos. With independent tobacco experts, auctioneers, buyers, warehouse men, with men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-to-1.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.